Matthew chapter 2, if you would. Matthew chapter 2. As we take the Lord's Supper, sometimes it's helpful for us to look at the story of Jesus through different lenses, to look at it from different perspectives. So this morning, I want us to look through the lens of Israel, the nation of Israel. I want us to notice some of the similarities between the story of Jesus and the story of the people of Israel. And hopefully that will help us notice some of the key differences between those two stories. And ultimately, I hope that seeing the story of Jesus in this way will bring us to a greater understanding of what his death and his resurrection means for all of us. So let's start in Matthew chapter 2. And I'm going to start reading in verse 13, but a little bit of context is helpful. Jesus has just been born, but King Herod, the king of the land of Judea, he hears that Jesus is supposed to become the next king of the Jews. So he sees Jesus as a threat, and he's trying to find baby Jesus and kill him. So starting in verse 13 of Matthew 2. Now when the wise men had departed, behold, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream and said, "Rise, take the child and his mother and flee to Egypt and remain there until I tell you, for Herod is about to search for the child to destroy him." And he rose and took the child and his mother by night and departed to Egypt and remained there until the death of Herod. This was to fulfill what the Lord had spoken by the prophet, "Out of Egypt I called my son." So an angel appears to Joseph and helps him escape from Herod. But what I want to draw your attention to as we begin is the quotation at the very end of verse 15. "Out of Egypt I called my son." So I believe Shane has mentioned this a few times over the last several years. This is a quotation from the ancient Israelite prophet Hosea. And if we won't take the time to do this, but if we were to take the time to go back to Hosea chapter 11 and read verse 1, where this quotation comes from, we would know this, that in the original context, Hosea is not talking about Jesus. He's talking about Israel when he refers to God's son. But here, of course, in Matthew 2, when Matthew refers to God's son, he's clearly talking about Jesus. So some people, some skeptics, think that this is a slip-up by Matthew, that he doesn't know his Bible very well, that he doesn't understand what he's quoting. But really, I think for those of us with faith, it's a clue that helps us understand what Matthew is trying to show us. In the first few chapters of Matthew, he tells the story of Jesus, and specifically Jesus' early life, in a way that's very similar to the story of the people of Israel. And what the similarity between that is that both Israel and Jesus, they fall into the category of God's son, as Shane has referenced a few times. And specifically, these first few chapters in Matthew, they're very similar to the history of the Exodus of the people of Israel and the period of time shortly after that when the people of Israel wandered in the wilderness for many years. For the sake of time, we won't read all of Matthew 1 through 4. But now that we've noticed this idea, let's just go through and briefly notice some different key parallels. And then after that, we'll reflect on what all of this means. So start in chapter 1 and verse 1, very first few words of Matthew's gospel. "The book of the genealogy of Jesus Christ, the son of David, the son of Abraham." So Matthew begins with the genealogy of Jesus going all the way back to Abraham, who was the first patriarch of Israel. And if we wanted to start an action-packed story, a novel or something, we probably would not start with a genealogy because we tend to think those are dry and boring. But by immediately referencing Abraham, Matthew is reminding us that God made a promise to Abraham, that Abraham would be the ancestor of a great nation, and that through that nation, all the families on the earth would be blessed. After the genealogy, still in chapter 1, Matthew tells the story of Jesus' birth, starting in verse 18. "Now the birth of Jesus Christ took place in this way. When his mother Mary had been betrothed to Joseph, before they came together, she was found to be with child from the Holy Spirit. And her husband Joseph, being a just man and unwilling to put her to shame, resolved to divorce her quietly. But as he considered these things, behold, an angel of the Lord appeared to him in a dream, saying, Joseph, son of David, do not fear to take Mary as your wife, for what is conceived in her is from the Holy Spirit. She will bear a son, and you shall call his name Jesus, for he will save his people from their sins. So Jesus is born miraculously. He does not have a human father. And if you're familiar with the story of Israel, of course, and the story of Abraham, Abraham and his wife Sarah didn't have a baby until Sarah was 90 years old, and Abraham was 100. So that certainly qualifies as a miraculous birth. So there's another point of similarity. And then in chapter 2, after Jesus is born, wise men from a faraway country come. And let's read what it says in verse 11. Going into the house, the wise men saw the child with Mary, his mother, and they fell down and worshipped him. Then, opening their treasures, they offered him gifts, gold and frankincense and myrrh. If you remember the Exodus story, when the people of Israel leave Egypt, the Egyptians give them gifts as they leave, and gold is specifically mentioned in Exodus. And then Herod, who is the king of Judea, he hears about this baby from the wise man that's supposed to be the new king, as we just discussed and read. And so he's jealous, and he tries to eliminate Jesus, specifically by putting all of the baby boys in the town of Bethlehem, where Jesus was born, to death. And that is very reminiscent of Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, who, when Israel became a threat to his power, he had all of the Israelite baby boys put to death. And so that's another point of similarity. And many years later, once Jesus is grown up, Jesus is baptized by John in the Jordan. Chapter 3 of Matthew in verse 13. Jesus came from Galilee to the Jordan to John to be baptized by him. John would have prevented him, saying, I need to be baptized by you, and do you come to me? But Jesus answered, let it be so now, for thus it is fitting for us to fulfill all righteousness. Then John consented. And when Jesus was baptized, immediately he went up from the water, and behold, the heavens were opened to him, and he saw the Spirit of God descending like a dove and coming to rest on him. And behold, a voice from heaven said, this is my beloved Son, with whom I am well pleased. So God, again, identifies Jesus as his son, just like Israel as a nation was considered God's son, God's children. And also Jesus, he goes down into the waters of the Jordan River and then comes back up. Just like when Israel escaped Egypt, they went down into the Red Sea that God had parted for them, and then they came up the other side to escape from the Egyptians. And immediately after that, Jesus goes into the wilderness, and he fasts for 40 days, just as the people of Israel went into the wilderness for 40 years after they crossed the Red Sea. And then one of the most striking similarities between these two stories is the temptations that Jesus and Israel encounter in the wilderness. And so I actually want to go ahead and read all of this story from Matthew chapter 4, because it is a great story. Starting in verse 2, after fasting 40 days and 40 nights, Jesus was hungry. The understatement of the Bible right there. And the tempter came and said to him, if you are the Son of God, command these stones to become loaves of bread. If you recall, in the wilderness, Israel was constantly tempted by hunger. God made manna appear out of nowhere to feed the Israelites. So the devil is saying, why don't you just do the same thing that God did for Israel in the wilderness? Why don't you miraculously provide food for yourself? But Jesus answered, it is written, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that comes from the mouth of God. Then the devil took him to the holy city and set him on the pinnacle of the temple and said to him, if you are the Son of God, throw yourself down. For it is written, he will command his angels concerning you, and on their hands they will bear you up, lest you strike your foot against a stone. So the devil tempts Jesus by questioning whether God will really protect him and provide for him. In the wilderness, The Israelites were constantly testing God. They were constantly questioning, will God really protect us from our enemies? Will God really provide us with what he has promised us? They were constantly testing God. But Jesus replied to the devil, again it is written, you shall not put the Lord your God to the test. And again, the devil took him to a very high mountain and showed him all the kingdoms of the world and their glory. And he said to him, all these I will give you if you will fall down. The people of Israel through Abraham's descendants. And then in Exodus 19, if you're familiar with that passage, God said that if Israel as a nation was obedient and faithful to God, they would be a kingdom of priests. They would be a holy nation. Through their obedience, the entire nation would share God's blessings with the whole world. That was their calling. I apologize, I'm having to adjust my volume a bit here. So their calling was to be a kingdom of priests. They were supposed to mediate God's blessings to the whole world. But Israel, of course, failed at their calling. If you've read a single page of the Old Testament, you will know that they did not live up to the calling that God had given them. They failed to trust in God pretty much every chance they got. From Egypt to the wilderness to the promised land to their captivity, they frequently did what they wanted to do rather than what God had in store for them. And rather than trusting that what God had in store for them was good. And so Jesus, he takes up that calling. In Matthew, Jesus, he is fulfilling, he is restoring, he is redeeming Israel's purpose. Israel had failed, but Jesus is redeeming them. And we actually saw that in the end of chapter 1 from the verses we read. When the angel appears to Joseph, he tells Joseph that Jesus will save the people from their sins. Israel had become hopeless. They had lost their way. But Jesus was helping them find their way back to God. So that's one link between the story of Jesus and the story of Israel. And the second link is that the same forces of evil that tried to destroy the people of Israel, that tried to lead them astray, they are still at work in the story of Jesus. Human evil is still trying to maintain its power over God's people. We see that in Pharaoh, and we see that in Herod. And then, of course, spiritual evil is still trying to thwart God's plans. We see that in the temptations that Israel faced in the wilderness. And we see that, of course, in Satan tempting Jesus in the wilderness. So the question that we have before us as we read this story is this. Will Jesus fulfill Israel's purpose? Will he be the obedient son of God that Israel was not? Or will the powers of evil overcome him? Of course, we see in the story of Jesus' temptation that we just read a glimpse of the answer to that question. The devil tempts Jesus. He tries to get him to question his identity as God's son, to question his calling and his trust in God the Father. But Jesus does not give in. His belief in his identity as God's son, and by extension, his trust in God the Father, it never wavers. Even when the devil offers him rule over the entire world, which would probably mean an escape from crucifixion, Jesus refuses. So in the initial test of whether or not God, or whether or not Jesus will be God's obedient son, Jesus passes with flying colors. But that is not the last test that Jesus faces, of course. Ultimately, Jesus is God's faithful, obedient son all the way to the cross. Let's go ahead and turn to Matthew 26. This is a parallel account of the passages that Jackson just read for us, as we sang. I do think that sometimes the best sermons are the ones that we sing to each other, and I certainly think that was the case with that. But in chapter 26, in the Garden of Gethsemane, Jesus is about to be betrayed, he's about to be handed over to his enemies, and he's about to be crucified. He is all alone. Even his disciples abandon him. What does he say? What does he pray to God? Starting in verse 37 of Matthew 26. Taking with him Peter and the two sons of Zebedee, he began to be sorrowful and troubled. Then he said to them, "My soul is very sorrowful, even to death. Remain here and watch with me." And going a little farther, he fell on his face and prayed, saying, "My Father, if it be possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as you will." And he came to the disciples and found them sleeping. And he said to Peter, "So could you not watch with me 1 hour? Watch and pray that you may not enter into temptation. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak." Again, for the second time, he went away and prayed, "My Father, if this cannot pass unless I drink it, your will be done." Not my will, but your will. Even though Jesus knows that he is going to endure a painful, humiliating death, he obeys God. And he obeys God because he trusts in God's promises. Israel disobeyed God because they didn't trust that God could take care of them or protect them or give them the promised land. But Jesus obeyed God because he knew that God would raise him from the dead. He trusted that God would raise him. And so by going to the cross and being raised on the third day, Jesus ultimately fulfilled and redeemed the purpose of Israel. Through Jesus' sacrifice, all the nations of the earth can receive God's blessings and salvation. And we see that at the end of Matthew, the Great Commission, as it's very famously known. Jesus sends out his disciples to make disciples of all the nations so that they can enjoy the blessings of God and the salvation that comes from God. So reflecting on the story of Jesus and on the story of Israel helps us understand who Jesus is and why he came to earth. But what exactly does it mean for us today? Well, as we've talked about this year a lot with our theme, the gospel is for all. It's not just good news for the people of Israel. So seeing the connection between Jesus and Israel, it's not just good news for Israel, it's good news for us. It's very easy for us to look back and criticize the people of Israel for their lack of faith. After all, they had such a high calling. They saw all of the incredible miracles and works that God did for them. They even had a special covenant with God. And yet, time after time after time, they all failed. But the more we think about that story, the more we reflect on the story of Israel, I think we should realize that the story of Israel is our story. How many times have each of us failed to be God's obedient children? How often have we worshipped the gods of greed or lust or pride instead of the true God? How often have we disregarded the things that God has done for us and given us, and instead taken the credit for those things ourselves? How often have we failed to trust that what God wants for us, that what God has promised us, is so much better than what we can get through sin and through selfishness? Israel is not the only one who has fallen short of being God's children. We have fallen short too. Just like Israel, we need Jesus to redeem us. And thankfully, that is exactly what he did on the cross. And that's what we're here to remember this morning. So as we take the Lord's Supper, let's reflect on what the story of Jesus means. It's a story for everyone who has lost their way. It's for everyone who has trusted in their own wisdom rather than God's wisdom. It's for everyone who has been tempted and conquered by evil. And that means it's a story for me. It's a story for each one of you. We have all cut ourselves off from God's blessings by choosing to follow our own paths. But Jesus has shown us a way. Jesus has brought God's blessings and salvation to us. And that's through our faith in what he accomplished on the cross. It's through our faith in his sacrifice on our behalf. A sacrifice that was unblemished. It was perfect. Because Jesus was the faithful and obedient Son of God that Israel could not be and that we cannot be. Praise be to Jesus Christ, the perfect and true Son of God, who brought the blessing of God to the entire world.
In a moment, we will pass through and give you an opportunity to take the emblems. They are double stacked, so take each stack. When everyone is served, then we will pray together, and then we will eat together.